Hey everyone, Reddit and the sales community. I'm super excited to have Chung Nguyen on the podcast with me. He's been a huge mentor of mine, and you know, it's rare you get someone of this caliber to give time out of his busy day. So I would love to introduce you, Chung Nguyen.
Hey, Davidson. How are you, man? I am so thankful to be here with you on this show, and this will be fantastic. I'm looking forward to the questions and helping as many people as I can.
Yeah. And I appreciate you taking time. You know, I know you're traveling a lot. Just to dive in a little bit more into your background so you guys have an idea. Chung was the number one cloud sales rep at Microsoft Azure, and he also did the same at Dell, and now he's making his mark at ServiceNow, which I know is blowing up like crazy. And I know, you know, pretty much all the major organizations and all the organizations I have been in the past is a client of ServiceNow. And you know what I would really like to get out of this interview is really just a sense of, you know, how you're able to predict the next wave in terms of technology. And just, it seems like you're always at the right place at the right time. Can you elaborate a little bit more on, you know, why you made the decision recently to go from being the top sales rep at Microsoft and now being, you know, one of the top sales rep at ServiceNow?
Davidson, you know, it's really funny, and it's going to sound really simple when I tell you this, but it's actually true, and this is how I've really kind of operated my whole career, and it's really about talking to your customers. So if you think about this, right, all of your customers, they have limited time. They have to solve really, really complex problems in their companies, in their environment. And so what they end up doing is they go and talk to everybody out there in the industry that could potentially help solve their problems. So as they go do this, they will hit on one or two or three companies that they go, oh my God, that's amazing technology, that's amazing people, that's amazing culture that can really help transform my company's environment or my company's problems. And what they're doing every time they kind of support or they espouse a particular solution, particular company, is they're really betting their badge that and their job, their careers on this company, on this platform. And so what I do is when I go talk to a lot of customers, and if I kind of get, you know, consistently the same answers back from them, and I always ask them, hey, what companies are you looking at? What kind of solutions are you looking at that you go, wow, that's amazing. And when I get those consistent answers back, then I know that's a key company or that's a key technology that I should really look into, because they're either going to be my biggest, next biggest competitors, or they're going to be companies that I really want to go to in the future when I'm looking. So that's how I go about finding the next big wave, the next big company. That's how I was able to kind of look at Microsoft in the right lens. That's how I was able to kind of look at ServiceNow in the right lens. And I've been really, really thankful for that approach because it's helped guide me to the right players and the right companies and the right solutions.
Yeah, it really reminds me of what Wayne Gretzky says about just staying ahead of the puck. He's always ahead of the puck, so you just see what the trajectory is going, and I think people often just look at right now, and you know, they don't really try to stay ahead of the trend. So that thanks for sharing that, Chung.
No problem.
And regards to, you know, I know that you know, cloud computing is and still is huge, but it sounds like services and providing a great customer experience is, you know, really, really big in 2018. Can you elaborate a little bit more about the types of services that ServiceNow, for people that aren't familiar with it, and what you guys do?
Yep. So basically, ServiceNow, well, we provide software that automates processes. So if you kind of think at a company, there's a lot of manual processes behind the scenes, whether that be IT, whether that be HR, whether that be facilities, legal, it doesn't really matter. There's a lot of mundane tasks that really hinder the speed and the agility in which companies can execute on. So we provide software that actually automates those processes, those flows, so that you can actually do and focus on your regular jobs versus kind of doing manual, tedious tasks.
Yeah, it's you know, automation. I know with data and AI and big data, you know, a lot of this. So who are the decision makers that you speak to? You know, I'm sure there's more than one, and it seems like the trends are that more departments and you know, there seems to be more of a consensus when it comes to making these huge decisions. So who are the decision makers that you primarily work with?
Yeah, so I would kind of tell you, you know, it really depends on the first, the size of the companies you're talking about. Like if you're talking about Fortune 50, Fortune 100 companies, a lot of those kind of big transformations that they have to go through are kind of made by big committees and groups of people. So you really can't just talk to like the CIO or you know, a director anymore. You have to kind of branch out into, you know, high and low on all of the IT stack. And then you have to go to, you know, the chief marketing officer, the CHRO, the SVP of sales, the chief revenue officer. So you have to kind of branch out into all the different lines of businesses and get their support, because ultimately they're going to be paying for the solutions that you're trying to sell to them. And then IT becomes the kind of broker and the bridge between technology and the line of business. So you want to make sure that they're completely on board as well. So I kind of take that kind of holistic view in terms of how I sell to my customers. And that way you kind of ensure that you have support up and down the chain of command and broad and wide throughout the organization as well. That's how I usually approach enterprise sales.
And do you see a trend that, you know, obviously information and IT is becoming more and more valuable in an organization, but sometimes people view it as a cost center. So how do you position it so that they don't look at it as just a, you know, a ticket item that doesn't add as much value as, you know, let's just say sales or marketing, for example?
Yeah, you know, in the last, I would say, kind of 5, 6, 7 years, I've definitely seen a change in how companies go to market. I know in the past, if you look at the last kind of 10, 15 years, IT was definitely a cost center. And they viewed IT as, hey, you know, this is just a little small niche function within the company that provides some back-end operations. But what they're finding now is that to be competitive in the marketplace, they actually have to have IT as a key stakeholder in the company. So now what you're seeing is you're seeing, you know, global CIOs having a seat at the table with the CEO. They're no longer reporting to the COO or the CFO. They report directly to the CEO themselves. And you can see this in a handful of really leading edge companies. If I look at companies like JP Morgan Chase, you know, Lori Beer is the CIO there. She has a direct seat at the table with Jamie Dimon. And the companies that are really, really accelerating and succeeding in the marketplace have that perspective to really partner with IT and make them a key stakeholder and partner in the overall business strategy and direction.
Yeah, that's a good point. I have noticed that the trends are that CIOs are getting a seat at the business table, where traditionally it was just CFOs and COOs. What are some of the new trends that you see in the financial services? Because, you know, they in the past were slow to adopt, you know, versus, you know, more like digital and MarTech companies, for example. What are you finding in the banking and financial services industry when it comes to innovation with technology?
Yeah, and you know, let me caveat by saying, like, a lot of the big banks, the big global banks, the top, you know, Fortune 50 banks that I deal with, I think there are definitely similar themes that are going on. The first one is, how do they digitize the bank? They have a lot of legacy applications, legacy processes, and they're really kind of streamlining and trying to become a digital bank. So, if you take our kind of consumer experience, like Uber, like Amazon, like PayPal, they're trying to actually provide a seamless consumer experience like that, but at their scale. So that's the first piece of it. I think the second thing that I'm seeing that is a big, big wave now is really around AI. How can they actually use AI embedded in their technologies, embedded in their platforms, to really give them an advantage to help them be a lot more agile? So I'm seeing that in a big, big way. And the third trend that I'm seeing at the major banks is really around, and I think you mentioned this earlier, which is providing that customer experience. How can they provide that seamless customer experience, provide the best customer experience through all of their different channels that they've got, whether that be online, through the phone, through, legacy retail branches, so that, when a customer is calling in for help, as they're walking to the branch, the bank tellers, the bank managers already know who's coming in, what the issues are, and that data flow is seamless so that the customer doesn't wait in line for 15 minutes and repeat what they actually just told someone else online, what their issues were. So I think those are the big major trends I'm seeing in banking right now.
Yeah, so you mentioned data flow, and it seems like compliance, and there's a lot of emphasis on keeping with data privacy, and I know that the European nations tend to be a lot more strict with that. Do you see trends, and do you see a focus on that within the U.S. market as well, especially in the financial services and the banking industries?
Oh, for sure. I mean, in all the banks I'm working with now, they are dealing with the GDPR regulations in Europe right now, and they take that very, very seriously. But I think the great thing about what they're doing now is they're not looking at that as, hey, this is a destination. Once we kind of become GDPR compliant, or once we kind of meet these regulations, then we're going to be okay. I think the leading banks I'm working with now, what their view is that, hey, listen, this is more of a journey than anything else. So we just have these wave of regulations that we have to meet in Europe right now. But those regulations can change at any point in time. How do we make our systems and platforms and processes to be agile so that, if those regulations change, we're not caught in a vicious cycle of trying to kind of catch up to the next wave? How can we actually change immediately to kind of be compliant so that we can actually meet our customer needs? So that's what I'm seeing with the banks now.
So it sounds like companies, the most innovative companies, want to be proactive rather than reactive. So for you, Chong, like, how do you stay proactive in terms of staying up to date with the latest sales methodologies? Or do you think fundamentally building relationships and trust and sales is still, the same as it was 10, 15 years ago?
It's kind of funny. I actually don't read a lot of kind of like sales books and sales methodologies and whatnot. And I think, if I were to zoom out, fundamentally, my job hasn't really changed in about 15 or 20 years. How I approach it might be a bit different. Some of the tools I might use are a bit different. But the approach itself actually hasn't changed. And I'll walk you kind of through that a bit. The first approach I kind of take is, know your customers inside out. So dive into their environment, their processes, their people, their culture, how they actually run their business. You have to kind of know that first and foremost. And then what I try to do is I apply, okay, I have a certain solution that may or may not be able to help resolve some of their business issues. To the extent that it actually does fit and resolve some of their issues, I then marry them together. And then I come with a solution that can help them, right? And then we're going to determine what that value of that solution is. And then I can go make that sale. I mean, that's how I've always approached my customers, and it's always kind of worked. To do that really, really well, you almost have to be I would say a constant student. So what I am reading a lot of is just, you know, a lot of books around psychology so that I understand human behavior. I read a lot of articles and periodicals, magazines, whatever it is I need to do around different trends that are actually emerging. So AI is definitely a big trend, autonomous vehicles. So things that you actually don't think that would affect your customers, but everything is kind of intertwined and interconnected. And so the broader experiences and sense that you get from different industries and from different customer problems, you'll be able to kind of draw that connection and provide that insight to your customers that they might not have thought about it in the first place. So I think that's how I really end up adding a lot of value to my customers.
Yeah, thanks for sharing. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely very evident that you do a lot of preparation, probably more than 99% of top salespeople out there. I mean, on that note, like, what is Truong's secret sauce? You know, I know there's no shortcut to being successful, especially in sales, but, you know, I know preparation is one. I know just being a consultant is one. Like, what would you say are some of the things that really sets you apart from everyone else?
That's funny. I think you kind of hit on most of them, but let me see this. Preparation is definitely key. And, you know, the one thing that I would tell young sales folks coming up the ranks is the higher you go in the organization, so if you're meeting with a C-level executive, CIO, or chief marketing officer, spend an inordinate amount of time preparing for that. You know, the ratio could be like 40 to 1, 40 hours of preparation to your one-hour meeting. You know, and then as you kind of go down the stack, the EVP and SVP levels, the ratio might be 20 to 1, 10 to 1. And as you kind of get to the VP and director level, it might be 5 to 1 or 1 to 1. But preparation is definitely the key. If you look at any kind of senior amazing athletes in their respective fields, they play for 3 hours, but they've prepared for like 300 hours behind the scenes just to kind of get to that point in that game. And it's no different for us on our end in the high-end sales game. I think the other thing that's made me hugely successful is just be very inquisitive, right? Always ask why. So when your company or your customers tell you, no, I can't do this, or no, we can't do that, okay, then why? Help me understand that. And just really kind of peel the layers of onions away so that you can get to the root cause. Because once you get to the root of it, then you can actually respond accordingly. So just to have a very, very inquisitive nature. And I think the last thing that I think has really helped me is just love what you do. Be very, very passionate about it. And, you know, when you love what you do and you spend 60, 80 hours a week doing it, it doesn't feel like work, but two, your customers will know. Your customers will know that you care. And when they know that you care, then they're more open to kind of letting you in the door, giving you insights, telling you things that they might not tell anyone else, right? So just be very, very passionate about what you do.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like, I mean, obviously you're very passionate about sales. You know, you've been doing it your whole career. What made you want to go into sales? You know, I know most Asian Americans don't, especially with our parents, don't just say, hey, like, I want you to go into sales and that's what I want you to do for the rest of your career.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I think I accidentally got into sales because like a lot of kind of Asians growing up, you know, my parents kind of focused and said, hey, you know, when you grow up, you're going to be an engineer. When you grow up, you're going to be a doctor. You're going to be an accountant, but you're going to do something that will kind of provide a steady stream of income and money for it. And I think growing up, I was so, so poor that all I really wanted to do was just have a lot of money. And as I kind of looked around, I'm like, you know, where can I get the most amount of money? Where can I make that and really kind of provide back to my family? And what I found out was, and business is a great way to do that. And then as I kind of dug into that, like, what does business really mean, right? So you can go into business, you can work in finance, you can kind of do all these different roles. And then I got introduced to an amazing sales executive in my first job coming out of university at Digital Equipment Corporation. And he introduced me to the world of sales, and I thought, oh my God, I love this. Think about this, right? One, you're out with customers all day long. Two, you're trying to help them solve a problem that they've got at work. And three, if you do this really, really well, they're going to pay you a lot of money. And so that's how I kind of accidentally got into sales. And I got to tell you, I have loved it ever since. Loved it. I mean, I think this is like one of the best jobs in the world. And it's the only job that I know that you can make so much money and you can actually help change the course of a person's career, change the course of a company's direction by the stuff that you're doing for them.
Yeah, so thank you for sharing that. I mean, it's very evident in your voice and your passion for helping solve customers' problems. And, you know, it sounds like you'd like to give back to the community as well. Why do you do these things like the podcast and you know, write a book to share with the world? Like, what, you know, because you don't have to, right? I mean, you know, you make enough money where you can instead travel with that time or do things that you want to do. But like, I guess, like, why do you like to give back and mentor so many people in your life?
You know, I was really, really fortunate. My family was really, really fortunate that, you know, we escaped a war-torn country in Vietnam when I was a little kid. And we got help from a handful of folks from the Catholic Church that without their help, you know, I definitely wouldn't be here today. My family wouldn't be here today. And I've been so thankful for that. I didn't realize it when I was a kid or when I was a lot younger, but, you know, as I kind of grew up and had my family and whatnot, I realized, you know, it was through the generosity and kindness of a group of people that allowed me to be where I am today. And, you know, I'm so thankful for that, that there's so many people out there that actually need help as well, that need a helping hand like I did way back. And the actions of one or two or three people can help change that person's life forever, right? And to me, I think that's just so powerful to be able to kind of do that, to give back. And, you know, everything comes full circle, right? It's my turn now to actually give back and to pay forward because I can. And so that's why I'm so passionate about this right now.
Yeah, thanks for sharing. Yeah, I mean, it's such an amazing story. I definitely think you embody the American dream. And, you know, I know you grew up in Canada, but, yeah, I can certainly relate. You know, my mom was also a refugee, and she went to all the different islands, and it took her years and years before she came over here as a boat, you know, on the boat. So, I can relate just because, you know, I grew up with my grandma and my mother in the house, and they would share with me, you know, how fortunate we are to have a college education and, you know, to have an MBA and all these things. So, you know, I really appreciate your story, and I know that it will motivate a lot of other people to give back as well, because, you know, at the end of the day, we are fortunate and we do have the ability to change lives, and, you know, no matter where you are. You know, if you're living in America, you're better than, you know, most of the country in terms of opportunities. So thanks for sharing.
Thank you.
And I wanted to, so this is on a similar note. You know, I do think being pretty involved in the Asian American community, I feel like a lot of the traditional parents will focus more on you know, accounting and finance and economics and engineering, like, you know, like you said, they wanted you to become an engineer or to be a doctor. Do you think that the Asian, a lot of Asian American parents should, you know, focus just as much on soft skills, like what you're doing, be reading psychology books and the things that you're interested in now?
Yeah, you know, it's It's a great question. I've got two parts to the answer. One is, you know, if you're in sales and you ask a sales manager, hey, what should I focus on, a short-term goals or long-term goals? And they'll always tell you both. And that answer is actually quite right. And I think in general, I think, you know, we should focus both on the soft skills and the hard skills. So that's my short answer to that. But I think, you know, the other piece of it is, I think it's a matter of perspective too, right? Because if you think about it, at least my parents were blue collar, minimum wage workers, didn't make a lot of money. And all they wanted for their kids was, hey, how do we change that color from blue to white? You know, can you get an office job? Can you kind of do something with that and kind of make decent money? So that was their perspective. And I think, you know, if that was your perspective, I think the way that you push your kids is probably the right way to go, hey, get some hard skills, you know, do accounting, do finance, do engineering, become a doctor, really tangible stuff that's, I would say, hard skills, right? But then, you know, if you kind of go to the next level, which is, okay, if you want to be really, really successful, what's going to make you successful? And what's going to make you successful is hard skills will get you in the door. Soft skills will actually ensure that you actually climb through the ranks and become really, really successful. And so, you know, if you want to be an executive in a company, if you want to be, you know, part of the top tier, the C-level suite, you have to have the soft skills to kind of get there. And so I think that would be my thoughts on that.
Yeah, on that note, you know, I'm definitely starting to realize, like you mentioned a lot in your podcasts and interviews, that, you know, and you have to win the internal battle before you can win the external battle, in terms of just being able to, you know, get your VPs and your directors and all your managers buy-in so that they can allocate resources to help you win some of these deals. So what are your suggestions on how one could you know, win that battle internally? Because I'm starting to realize, you know, working for a Fortune 1000 company now, that the internal is probably harder than external most of the time, depending how large the deal is.
Yeah, no, I would agree with you, Davidson, completely. I think sometimes the internal battle is definitely harder than actually selling to the customer. And I think what it comes down to is it's more perspective than anything else, right? Because as I look at it, I remember early in my career when I was kind of a lot younger, God, you know, I had this perspective. I was like, hey, I'm the lead sales guy. I'm going to sell to my customers, and everyone in the company is just people that actually need to do stuff for me. That's it. And so, you know, early in my career, I treated the operations folks, the sales folks as just, hey, they all kind of report to me and they're going to do exactly what I tell them. And because I'm the front guy to the customer. And then as you kind of grow up and you mature a bit, and especially if you're working for big companies, like, you know, the IBMs, the Ciscos, the Dells, the Microsofts of the world, the big companies, your perspective needs to change, right? And mine definitely changed. And when you start looking at your internal folks as just people you actually have to sell to, their internal sales constituents, then your whole outlook kind of definitely changes. So if you have a direction you know that you want to take the customer on, but you need this help from your operations, your finance, your internal sales teams, and you need them to kind of row in the same direction, then what you need to kind of do is treat them as customers, right? And then as soon as you start treating them as customers that you actually have to win over, that you have to convince, that you have to sell to, those internal customers are actually no different than your external customers. And then you actually kind of behave in the right way. You treat them in the right way. And then everything actually starts going in the right way. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's a really, really good point. You know, I do think too often salespeople take the internal people for granted, whether it's marketing or, you know, just any resource, that any sales engineers, whatever, whoever it is that helps you win the business. And I think if we all make a shift and treating them like how we would treat our best client, we would probably get less resistance when it comes to asking for favors.
Oh, totally, totally. And I guarantee you, when you do that, because I've seen the best salespeople in different companies, they behave, they act, they treat their internal constituents exactly like that. And they are by far always the top 10% performers in the company.
Yeah, thanks for sharing. I mean, this is something that I've been hearing a lot from the top sales reps at my company, that they treat each relationship, whether it's splitting deals or getting senior sales folks on them on the bigger deals, really, really carefully. Like they'll drop everything just to make sure that their relationship within their reputation within the company is top notch. Just because, like you said, you never know when you're gonna need someone to help you. So that I think that's a really good takeaway. And I just wanted to go back to, I know you got your MBA at Booth, and seems like you do a lot of networking. What are some of your advice and tips for people who, are more introverted that, look to reaching out for mentorship, as something that is challenging for them?
Yeah, I will tell you, if you're an introvert or an extrovert, I don't think it matters. I think it's a lot of this is actually has to do with kind of muscle memory than anything else. So, for example, if you're an introvert and you want to go out and you want to network and you want to do a lot of that, kind of set goals along the way. If you're an introvert, I know it takes a bit of energy to kind of, go to networking events or spend time with folks to kind of build those networks. But if you set kind of achievable goals like, hey, I'm going to meet a new person, well, one person a week, right? And then you slowly start to build that to two people and then three people. And before you know it, your network actually expands like you wouldn't believe. But you kind of have to kind of put those motions in place for, if I were to relate this to my younger days when I was preparing for a marathon, it takes you months and months to prepare for a marathon. You don't kind of wake up one day and go, ooh, you know what? I'm going to run 26.2 miles. Like, it's just not going to happen, right? You kind of build plans over a period of time, build up the muscle, build up the endurance to kind of do it. And I would say if you're an introvert, do the exact same thing. It's really, really hard, but if you kind of stick to that plan, eventually, before you know it, you're going to have this massive network that you can kind of leverage and pull from.
Yeah, I mean, that brings up a good point. I mean, I definitely think one of the big takeaways from this conversation is that there's no shortcut with anything, right? When it comes to networking, building relationships, building trust, being a consultant, everything takes time and energy. But on that note, like, what do you do personally to balance out? Obviously you have a tremendous work ethic, but what do you do for fun to, kind of just clear your mind sometimes?
Huh, that's a good question. My hobbies are actually really, really simple, Davidson. So if I look at a bunch of things that I do to kind of unwind, to relax and whatnot, I kind of do some of the stuff that you do, which is I definitely write in the spare time that I have, and you'll see evidence of that with the new book coming out in at the end of August or early September. I love being around with family and friends and just having a great dinner together. And a lot of the dinners now that we do is I'll cook at home, or we'll be at a friend's place and we'll cook there with a couple of bottles of wine. So I find that kind of really fun to do. I love to exercise. I know you're a big proponent of exercising as well. So I'll either go run, or I'll do a simple workout in the basement, or I'll go to kickboxing, but something to sweat it out. I find that tremendously helpful. And it sounds so boring, but sometimes I just love sitting back and watching a great series on Netflix and chilling on a Friday night. So it sounds boring as heck, but I just enjoy it.
What's your favorite Netflix series?
You know, so I have this theory and pattern that I execute upon, which is I don't watch a show until it's been out for 5 or 6 years, so that way I can kind of start binging on it. And right now, I am in the midst of Homeland, and I think it's such a great show on Homeland right now.
Yeah, I actually haven't watched that, but I've heard a lot of people, like, raving critics about it, so I definitely have to check it out. Well,
check
Jason,
it out.
Mentioned...
I think it's well done.
Yeah, thanks for the recommendation. So you talked a little bit about, you know, your book that's coming out soon. It sounds like it's coming out relatively soon. Can you tell us a little bit more about, you know, what some of the takeaways are, or just, you know, give us a little teaser on what it's about?
I can. So for those of you who've read my first book, Winning the Cloud, it's kind of broken off into different chapters and lessons learned from the different chapters and the stories behind it. So in the next book, what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to apply everything that's in that book to a real life sales situation. And so you're going to walk through exactly what happened, the thought processes behind it. It's dramatized a bit so that you love the story. I'm hoping that you'll love the story. And so that's about it. It's kind of fictionalized, dramatized a bit, and taking everything that you would have gotten learned from book number one and applying it to a real life situation in book number two.
Yeah, and the best part about, like, what I love about your book is that it's definitely economies of words. You know, you get the stories across, like, you're not, you know, every chapter there's a valuable takeaway. So it's, you know, I definitely think that in 2018, you know, because of the social media and our smartphones, our attention spans are a little bit shorter now. So it is tough to get salespeople who, you know, most of us have ADHD to really sit down and read a book. But I know yours, you know, I was able to read in a day just because it was short, and, you know, there was a lot of funny stories with it as well. So thank you for sharing that with us.
Awesome. I'm glad you liked it.
So I have a couple more questions. So I would love to learn more about some of the thought leadership that, you know, you do mention a little bit about psychology, and you want to keep up to date with all the business trends and all that. You know, I know that you recommended the Wall Street Journal when we met for dinner one day, but what else would you recommend for people that want to be more business-minded, that, you know, want to learn the latest on what's going on in their industries?
Oh, that's a good question. I think I'm trying to think about all the stuff that I kind of read on a daily basis, or what's actually had the most impact on me in terms of how I think and my approach to things. I would tell you, if you haven't read Arianna Huffington's stuff on Thrive Global, I think that's really, really good content. And there's a lot of lessons learned there about life, about industries, about people that I think are just so applicable to a lot of different areas, and it will help shape your thinking. It's definitely helped shape mine. I would say, you know, pick up any Malcolm Gladwell book. I think that's really, really good. I think Malcolm has such an inquisitive mind that he takes such a different perspective and approach to a simple problem or a simple situation that I think is so helpful. And the more that we can actually train our minds to do that, I think is fantastic. And I love anything by Michael Lewis as well. I mean, I think he is such a great, great storyteller that, you know, no matter what kind of topic or story, I just get so engrossed every time I read one of his books. So I think those are the kind of key things that I would kind of dive into.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I think these are the common theme with all these people, that they're amazing storytellers and they're excellent writers too. They're great communicators. So sounds like you know, you've learned from them, even though it's your way of de-stressing sometimes. So what's the legacy that you want to leave behind? You know, you've obviously had a tremendous amount of success with your business. You know, it sounds like you're a great family man. You have a lot of friends. You're healthy. You know, what do you want to leave behind? Like, what's next for you? You know, I know you have your book coming, but it seems like this is just the tipping point, and that there's a lot more in store for us to find out with you.
You know, it's kind of funny. I'll tell you a funny story. I was working with a large global healthcare company a few years back, and you know, I had sold them this amazing solution, and we went through so much trouble to kind of implement that solution. And at the end of it, like, it was so painful for like a year. At the end of it, one of the SVPs there came to me, and you know, we were out celebrating, and he said, "Trong, you know, there's a lot that people can say about you. And keep in mind, like, we've gone through a lot of battles by now, so there were all scars by everybody to kind of prove it." He said, "The one thing that I would tell you that I like about you is that you made a difference." And to me, that comment has kind of just stuck with me like forever. And it's the biggest compliment that I've ever received. And I think if the one legacy I would want to leave behind is, hey, Trong's made a difference, right? Whether you liked me or not, doesn't matter. You know, whether you appreciated some of the things that I did or some of the things I sold, doesn't matter. But for me to make a difference means everything. And, you know, I'll give you another simple example. I moved to Jersey City recently, and I started at a kickboxing club there, had a fantastic time. And the owner, Paul Clark, he wanted to actually kind of expand and kind of start an after-school program for inner-city kids that, you know, if they didn't have anything to do after school, they were hanging out on the street, selling drugs, doing all these things that, you know, will probably lead them down a very, very different path. He wanted to start an after-school program so that he can actually bring these kids in the gym, train them, give them an outlet, provide them with the pads and everything that they would need so that, you know, he knows that their parents actually don't have any money to kind of to send them to that type of club. But he's doing this because he wanted to make a difference. And I've actually started help fundraising with him in a big way because I want to make sure that those kids are inside the gym doing something productive versus hanging out on the street doing something that they shouldn't be doing. And to me, you know, that makes a big difference. And you don't have to be the CEO. You don't have to be the next C-level executive in a company to make a big difference. You can make a big difference wherever you are, at what level, whatever level you're at. So I want to kind of leave that with the listeners.
Wow. Yeah, thank you so much, Trong. I really appreciate your time. You know, you're obviously making a huge impact in the community, you know, not only on an organizational level, but just, you know, the ability to impact so many lives and people that, like you say, that come from, you know, lower income families and just giving them an opportunity. So I really, really appreciate, you know, what you're doing, and definitely look forward to see what you're up to over the next, you know, 5 years and beyond that as well. So thank you so much, Sean. Appreciate it.
Awesome, Davidson. Thank you so much. And you know what? Kudos to you. Thank you so much for providing the platforms young agents kind of come up in the sales ranks, in the marketing ranks, in the business ranks. I think the more that we can do to help all of them kind of come up and get the right mentors so that they can kind of get in the right trajectory, I think will make all the difference in the world.
Yeah, I mean, I'll leave you with this. You know, I know that, you know, we've only met once, you know, in person, but just even just listening to your content and reading your book and, you know, just following some of the processes that you set in place, you know, I know that my career trajectory has definitely gone up. You know, I've been, you know, preparing a lot more for each one of my meetings. You know, I used to rely just on my likability, but, you know, that only goes so far, especially when you're working with C-level executives, right, especially on enterprise level where, you know, you still have to have the analytical mindset and the business mindset. And, you know, I've definitely taken some of what you said about, becoming a subject matter expert and just learning the industry trends, and you know, not only when it comes to compliance and you know, technology, but so I personally, you know, since I've met you, have definitely been more dedicated to the craft of sales, and I definitely think that, you know, if you're, you know, we've only had one interaction, but I'm sure everyone else that you surround yourself with has learned a lot from you as well. So, you know, I just wanted to say I appreciate you and thank you for everything.
Awesome. And thank you for having me on your show.
Thanks, Charles.